Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your Shazammed forecast of modern music and critical thinking. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. With us today is Joe Coscarelli. Hi, Joe.
How you doing?
And John Caramonica.
Popcast massive in the building.
We're going to talk about Cheerleader by OMI, of which you just heard the remix by Felix Yen. The number one song in the country, in this country.
and many more.
Many more. It's been a hit in, what, more than 50 countries?
So many countries. Are there more than 50 countries?
I think so.
Oh my.
No, it's OMI. So, Joe, you just spoke to OMI.
I did.
He's in town.
I spent the day with him
this
yesterday.
This is his moment. He's got to do a lot in this particular moment here.
I mean, I don't think there's a bigger day for a musician than the day he had on Tuesday, which is he woke up to find out his song was number one in the United States. He played Good Morning America, call time, 4:45 a.m.
Yeah.
Then he played The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon and The Roots.
Right.
Know, sometime later in the afternoon. And that, I mean, that's... And jackpot.
Like you say, and anyone who'll put a microphone in front of him.
Yes.
Yes.
I am one of the people who looked up OMI on Wikipedia, and I looked in the section, the subsection called discography, and I saw that there seemed to be two songs by OMI, and one is the remix by Felix Yen, and one is the original.
Yeah.
And I didn't see anything else.
So he's batting 1,000.
He's batting 1,000.
Is what you're saying. He's just killing it.
Okay.
Just pure smash.
But this leads me to the next question. How was this song chosen? How was it anointed? What is the story behind this song?
It's been a very, very, very long road for this song.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was released originally in 2012. Not the version that most people have heard across the world, but a slower, sort of more obviously reggae version of the song. It had an accompanying video, very low budget, filmed in Oregon.
The one about the bank heist.
The one about the bank heist. So very low budget.
Does he have a connection to Oregon? Or are there just good tax breaks for the reggae community?
His manager chose it, and he said it was beautiful.
We got to call the Oregon film and television liaison people, see if there's some hot tax breaks for videos.
For those who don't know, Cheerleader is a song in which the central character is talking about his girlfriend and saying she's my cheerleader. It's basically a song about monogamy.
Yeah, you know, she's so supportive of him that he doesn't want to cheat on her.
Right. He's not tempted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, in fact, somebody asks him if he's tempted.
No,
and
not
he says,
really.
No, not really. Which implies, well, maybe a little.
Can we just sidebar for a second? Yeah. I'm pretty sure that Cheerleader is one of two songs in the top 10 or 15 that's about the same subject. The other one is... it's by Andy Grammer, I believe.
Honey,
I'm Good.
I'm Good.
Which is far and away the worst song of the year. Like, I mean, it's astonishingly bad. Mm. It's revolting. Not just in concept, but more in execution. But it's...
What's revolting about monogamy?
No, it's the earnestness and enthusiasm with which that sentiment is delivered, to say nothing of the mild disingenuousness that undercuts it.
I think we're going to be hearing more of that song in the next couple of weeks.
I'm so sorry.
You've been talking to the people from Shazam?
I have.
Okay, well, speaking of Shazam...
Before we get into Shazam's fortune-telling, we'll take it from Cheerleader. So there's this original version in 2012. You know, it percolates a little bit around Hawaii, I think. Like, it got some burn in Hawaii, which, you know, is one of the hubs where Caribbean records tend to take off. And then it gets heard by this guy, Patrick Moxey, who runs Ultra, which is an EDM label, and a dance music label.
A very long-running,
sort
of like very pre-EDM dance music label.
Sure. Which now has a relationship with Sony, and that will become relevant as the song moves along.
Right. Everybody bust out your copy of Ultra Chill 01, the 2-CD compilation.
Yes. I remember the Ultra compilation.
Yeah, let's, you know, this. I think Cheerleader Remix actually would have fit.
One.
And would have fit very well on really any of the Ultra Chill.
I think now they're just Spotify playlists. Instead of...
They're not $30 anymore. Right. Okay. Sorry, Patrick.
So Patrick is with a radio guy who's playing him sort of, you know, records that are bubbling in the islands. And Cheerleader sticks out to him for whatever reason, probably because it's exceptionally catchy. And it just, you know, it has this lilting little melody and positive vibes that people seem to be drawn to, obviously. Mm-hmm. So he commissioned a couple remixes of it, one by Ricky Blaze, who, you know, did a nice job.
A Brooklyn producer and performer. Mm-hmm.
Just making it, you know, it's still islandy, it's still reggae, it's not too different from what the song sounds like in its original version. Mm-hmm. The other is by a 20-year-old German.
What? How do you pronounce it? What?
Can you say that again?
Not quite. No. Felix Yen, this German remixer, producer, SoundCloud guy.
Yeah, tropical house. I mean, basically the last kind of year and a half in Clubland has been kind of going over to something that's been loosely called Tropical House. Robin Scholes is sort of like the main guy at the center of it. It's so sort of formless as an idea. It's fairly banal music-wise. It's almost like Coachella House in a mm-hmm. sense. Yes. It's like open air, bright sunshine. If you could sort of like superimpose like a Nana Musakori video on top of like 120 BPM like thump-thump house beat, that's kind of what it looks like.
Very low intensity.
Very low intensity, but sort of perfect for Cheerleader. So, you know, the song gets a new video. It's beachy this time instead of being filmed in Oregon. Less plot in the video, more dancing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, it's just a feel-good, summery song. And
it's white linen, embodiment of white linen.
Yes.
Just get in it.
And who loves white linen more than, and dance music more than Europeans? The song starts to catch on in Sweden, France, Italy. And it starts jumping up the global charts for, you know, on Spotify and Shazam as well. Shazam is, does everyone know what Shazam is at this point?
I would think so, but I mean, I'm down.
Hundreds of millions of people have it on their phone, but yeah. It's the app where you can press a button while a song is playing and it tells you what mm-hmm. that song is.
Yeah.
Exactly like that.
Yeah. So Shazam back in May predicted that Cheerleader would eventually be the number one song in the country, based on the number of people who were holding their phone up to their radio or their friend's laptop speaker or whatever it might have been and saying, like, what is this? And so many people wanted to figure out what this Felix Yen remix of Cheerleader was.
Nate Silver on the track.
I keep forgetting. Do Shazam searches influence chart positions?
They do not.
Maybe one day they will, but not,
yes,
but not yet.
That would be like literally an Ouroboros.
Yes, that would be a closed
that
circle.
That would just completely just done. There'd be no point. Like, we could all just go home.
Well, there has been. Well, okay.
Right.
All right. So here we are. The song is burning up Europe. Lots of people Shazamming it, and it's like
setting fire. Look what it did to Greece. It just decimated the economy.
It's gently rising to the top.
Gently rising to the top over the course of three years. So,
because the Yen remix originally came out in 2013.
Yes.
Right.
Here's another question. Why this song? I mean, is it because of the song? Is it because of Omi? Is it because it is representatively islandy? Is it because it's a certain kind of song that always needs to appear?
Well,
at
I don't
this
think it's a coincidence
year?
When it finally hit the top of the Billboard chart, which is, you know, middle of July. And that's the time when people want to mm-hmm. hear a song like this. This was a time when, you know, people are having cookouts. People are driving with the windows down. Like, they want this. They want this island feel. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing better than, you know, being on the streets of Brooklyn and pretending like you're in the Caribbean.
It's true.
You get the best of both worlds.
Although I actually just wonder if when Eastern Parkway gets taken over a few weeks from now, I wonder if anybody's going to give this record any spin.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's the pop version of that, which mm-hmm. means, sure. you know, it's the other reason that the song is so successful right now is it's getting played on three different radio formats. So it's being played in top 40. It's being played on pop stations. It's being played on dance stations.
Yes.
Like Amp 92.3, which hosted an OMI event last night at Miss Lily's, the nice Jamaican restaurant downtown.
Sure.
And then it's also being played on urban radio.
Yeah, peace to Matt Nari while we're here.
John Caramonica. What do you think about this song in relation to other songs like it in the past?
As Joe was saying, you know, every summer, every other summer, mainstream America, white America decides they need a hit of something like this. And unfortunately, what that creates is this sort of – kind of like a love and dump situation mm-hmm. with the pop mainstream and Jamaican artists, generally Jamaican artists.
Lilt and Jilt.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like it.
Young Liltage. I like that. So, you know, you have a Wayne Wonder, you have, you know, a Tonto Metro and Devante or whatever. You have artists who...
Egyptian.
Oh, Egyptian, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Although I feel like Egyptian never 100% made it on the pop side, right. But...
New York City, at least.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously the number one record in New York in, like, whatever year, that, whatever summer that was. So you have these records that come up, and then, as Joe witnessed the other day... All of a sudden, all these burdens are placed on these artists. The pop mainstream and the industry behind it asks a tremendous amount of these artists in a very compressed period of time. And then obviously once the Labor Day comes and the weather starts to chill, they're basically going to be shipped back and be like, thank you very much. We don't need anything from you anymore. And that's, I got to imagine, Omi's an interesting case because Omi doesn't have a career, basically. This is Omi's career.
Yeah.
But for someone like, say, Wayne Wonder, who had a career before and who has had a career since, I'm sure part of the struggle of having a hit of the size of No Letting Go, which is his big record, part of the struggle is how much of myself do I give to this moment when this moment is clearly evanescent?
Well, so let me stop you there and let's listen to a little bit of No Letting Go by Wayne Wonder.
She's a beauty, very special, really and truly.
So, Joe, for this piece you're writing about Omi, you talked to Wayne Wonder.
I did, and he, you know, it's been more than a decade since No Jeez. Letting Go came out. Is that right?
That seems right.
No Letting Go came out in 2003.
You said that so authoritatively.
more than a decade ago.
Sure.
When I was in grade school. Oh, can you believe that?
It's half my life ago.
Oh, my Lord.
And Wayne Wonder sort of acknowledged this trend that we're talking about. And he said, you know, every few years this sort of thing happens where it feels like reggae and dancehall is bubbling over and it's going to be an actual commercial force. But really what they want is a hit in the summertime. And you know, he said, like, it's hard to follow up that hit when people come to expect one thing from you. They don't really want to see you grow. They don't want to see you move into other genres. They just want No Letting Go.
Sure.
And that was actually an interesting time, the early 2000s, that run where Wayne Wonder sort of coming on the heels of Sean Paul. Atlantic Records was signing a lot of these guys, putting actual major label money, getting collaborations going. Obviously, Sean Paul became sort of something of a star, probably the biggest crossover reggae star.
The last Jamaican artist to have a number one before Omi, which was Temperature in 2006.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. So almost a decade ago.
So, you know, post Shaggy, post Beanie, post all mm-hmm. these guys. But there was a moment where, I mean, hip hop and dancehall obviously have a long running flirtation, and dub and hip hop, obviously, you know, going back to Kool Herc in the early 70s mm-hmm. and block parties and whatnot. There's always this sort of like a small antagonism, I think, between hip hop and dancehall. And so oftentimes dancehall artists like Sean Paul, in order to go quote-unquote mainstream or to cross over, the hip-hop is not a viable route for them. Obviously, Sean Paul did records with Beyonce and yada yada, but he's going to do better if he goes softer, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly something if you listen to the Sean Paul record that had the big crossover hits versus the Sean Paul record that came before it, the names of which are escaping me at the moment. But if you listen to that previous record, you're like, oh, this guy's kind of a hard dancehall star. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, he's just going to.
So it's a catch-22 because softer is the way to go international. But if you do that, then nobody wants to hear the next song from you.
I don't know if we're going to get a No Letting Go from Assassin, for instance.
No. I would love one, though. Although what's interesting, and this is maybe where it's worth talking a little bit more broadly about what's happening in reggae right now. We could theoretically get a No Letting Go from like Chronix or someone like that. I mean, the last two or three years, you have this kind of a basically roots reggae revival, which you know, in the hands of the right producer, could probably end up as like a lover's rock revival if we're going in that direction. Mm-hmm. You know, like say you have someone like Chronix, or even there's like a new Ja Cure record that has like sort of some elements of this in it. There's kind of in a weird way no reason it couldn't be one of those guys. It's not. Obviously, Omi is like a much more malleable presence than Chronix, who's been doing it for many years, and Ja Cure, who has had significant legal difficulties, to say the least, mm-hmm. But has still been making records for quite some time. In a way, maybe it's better that it's not those guys, because those guys would have to sort of bend themselves to do the thing, whereas Omi kind of just is like, I'll just show up.
The other side of that is that Omi is, rather than go the route of a Wayne Wonder, he doesn't want to be pigeonholed as a reggae artist or a dancehall artist. He wants to make world music. He wants to make urban pop. And he sort of came out of the gate saying that and was, you know, one of the first, you know, Jamaican artists in memory mm-hmm. who came out early and said in his home country, you know, I don't really make reggae music. And he did that because he wants to be marketable on a world scale. Now, you can see somebody else sort of playing that game is Shaggy, who mm-hmm. has a hit that's rising, I Need Your Love. Mm-hmm. And that's also sort of has this world music pop vibe with that he brings his, you know, Jamaican influence to, but it's certainly not a reggae record.
Weirdly, you can almost contend that like Pitbull is like a big reggae star, even though Pitbull doesn't make reggae records. But he, you know, if you listen, I mean, you're talking about this idea of sort of like global nightclub influence,
abstract international concept.
Yeah, I mean, Pitbull is sort of the king, the current titan of that, you know, throw in a producer like Red One or someone like Mohambi in the last couple of years, and all of a sudden you have these placeless records that are meant to evoke a feel of escape, it sort of trivializes basically the island experience in service of like a bunch of white people rolling on MDMA.
And that's where the EDM world is playing a huge part in this mm-hmm. because, and it's taking over in Jamaica from, you know, the people I spoke to for this story who, you know, spend time there are saying like, it's almost easier to hear EDM on the street than it is to hear reggae in some places.
Really?
And young people in Jamaica are, you know, being sort of drawn to this electronic music.
Was Omi talking about that directly, or was he talking about Tropical House directly?
You know, I don't think he has much interest in those things. He just wants to sing. The thing about him that doesn't really come across on the record, and you wouldn't know because we can't really hear any more of his songs, but he has a pretty great voice. Mm-hmm. And it sort of has this quality where it sounds auto-tuned, but it also sounds like that in person when mm-hmm. he's singing a cappella.
Interesting.
And I think he's more interested in singing and being a songwriter than he is in genre.
Yeah, he does this sort of like hard little short shake at the end of lines.
But at the same time, another thing he said was, I don't want to be the hook guy. He doesn't want to, mm-hmm. you know, get mm-hmm. on rap songs and just be known as the hook guy. He sort of knows all these potholes that he could hit on the road he's on, and he's trying to dodge all of them. Where that leaves him.
Is he signed for an album to anyone?
He is signed to Ultra, the EDM label.
As an artist.
As an artist. Mm-hmm. Yes. So he, you know, they say they're prepping a next single to hit sort of sometime before the end of the summer, which I think they're going to try and recreate the success of Cheerleader in, you know, while America is still on the Cheerleader wave, they're going to trickle it out in Europe and see, you know, how it runs overseas.
So a similar vibe. Oftentimes, not oftentimes, but from time to time, the big reggae song, like basically this complicated relationship that the white mainstream has with essentially a Black Caribbean artist that they're treating as disposable, as sort of soundtrack music and disposable. But sometimes that reggae song that ends up being disposable is not by a Caribbean artist. The song that ends up occupying this space, you look at last summer's hit, which is Rude by Magic.
Right.
Which is...
which shows that you don't even need for these artists to be from the Caribbean. You don't need them to be Black necessarily.
No, they just need a fire pit on a beach.
Yes.
They need a thing. What's the thing for the guitar? You know, they need a thing to do the chords on the guitar.
Capo.
Great. They need a capo. Those flip-flops that are brown.
Bob Marley poster.
Yeah, obviously. Tattered Bob Marley poster. The brown flip-flops with the rainbow thing on it. Those. solid. Yeah. Solid. Good to go. Weirdly, there's this parallel history. Like, you may think Rude by Magic is a terrible song. I do.
You may.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly do. Yeah. I recall very vividly the podcast where we talked about it last year. Mm-hmm. I remember you not even knowing what the song, like, when I told you what the song is about, you were shocked. Which is great, as it should be.
I just hadn't been listening.
Well, no, but it was weirdly.
You don't really need to listen.
But that's what I'm saying. It was so weirdly effective that it almost didn't matter that there was a substantive narrative undergirding it. But there's this parallel history, and you look at sort of like ska pop bands or ska punk bands of the 90s. You know, your Sublimes, your 311s. There is this sort of continuous undercurrent of like white stoner reggae influenced rock.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to Warped Tour on tour now, and reliably every year there's like two or three bands who are very much either holdouts from this 90s moment of that or are revivalists of that idea. While we're here, it's probably worth mentioning.
Yeah, what's happening with Ninth Wave Ska?
Yeah, it's worth talking about because I'm looking to commit seppuku. Uh-huh. And here's a thing that will allow me to do that. Sublime with Rome has a new album that's out this week.
That is the project involving one of the members formerly of Sublime.
One member of Sublime.
And Rome.
And Rome.
Actually, with Rome.
Right.
I mean, like, let's not to split hairs, but it's with him. Sublime with Rome has a new record out this week, and it's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Can I retire now?
Does that mean...
I officially done?
I think what that means, if I'm reading that intonation correctly,
mm-hmm.
is that you think it's actually really good.
Top five. I'm probably going to write about it next week. You know, there's like a song that sounds like the Red Hot Chili Peppers. There's a song that sounds like One Direction. It's a very malleable idea that they are a malleable sound that they are playing with. And it was very shocking to me when I listened to it, how Ninth Wave Ska maybe is starting to learn things that Eighth Wave and Seventh Wave and Sixth Wave just missed.
So it's becoming more
tour driven.
I don't even know what that means. But it sounds like it's becoming more pure pop, open to everything.
I think also it's a mature in a way. It's growing out of the small fixed idea of recreating one lick,
sure.
one drum pattern, which a lot of those early things basically are. But it's interesting that here we are in 2015 and there is still inexplicably and quite uncomfortably a parallel history of effectively white reggae that mm-hmm. persists in the wake of an OMI. And basically in the wake of an OMI, it's almost like two different values. Like OMI is like the all of a sudden the serious value proposition compared to what's going on in Sublime with Rome.
And yet he's in the EDM world.
Right. I mean, it's so it's strange. And obviously, I'm sure guys like, you know, Chronix or whoever in Jamaica, Cranium signed to Atlanta, like I'm sure guys like that are just sort of like heavy sigh.
Well, why don't we go out with the OMI that you never really knew or then the OMI you may never get to know, but who knows? The original version of Cheerleader. Thank you for coming, Joe Coscarelli, John Caramonica.
Take it back to 2012.
Woo.
Do you need me? Do you think I'm pretty? Do I make you feel like cheating? I'm like, no, not really. Cause, oh, I think that I found myself a cheerleader.
And that is this week's show. Thank you for listening. Our producers are Tamara Best and Jocelyn Gonzalez. You can read Joe Coscarelli on OMI. Is that coming out soon? Soon enough?
Yeah.
At nytimes.com/music. And listen to the variety of Tropical House and other things at our Spotify playlist.
Number one Tropical House playlist on Spotify,
it could
if
be.
I'm not mistaken.
It could be.
Yeah, definitely.
Shazam that.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week.